Okay, first of all, let me get straight down to business as I have a lot to cover. Where do I start? Okay. Let's start off, first of all, with the attacks and communique number one. Communique number one was released because certain criteria, even though it wasn't met, it was deemed that it was an alarming enough situation that would have long-reaching effects. We've been monitoring the situation and the supposed research that certain governmental agencies on your planet have been doing. We've been monitoring their conclusions and their action. We were prepared for the supposed attacks. However, they came a little bit later than we anticipated. This was due to the fact that they were planned and then rescheduled because of information that they received that was not totally accurate, but they deemed was accurate. The attacks were actually scheduled for the 19th in the early morning their time, which would be mid-afternoon, about the same time as they actually occurred, maybe a little later. Planning was done for that time in the morning in those areas because it would be deemed that the majority of the people would be asleep and they would be easier targets. However, things did go awry a little bit, and I will cover that in a moment. The attacks on Afghanistan were carried out using large quantities of missiles to saturate an area, which was hit successfully, but the damage was not that extensive due to the construction of the materials of the buildings in the area. Most of the buildings that were hit are easy to replace, and the equipment that was lost is minimal material due to the fact that the more important material was stored in caves and caverns deep within the mountains so that they would be safe from such an attack. These attacks, particularly the one in Afghanistan, was primarily done for effect, more along the lines of, we can hit you wherever. Now, the problems created by the attacks on Afghanistan. In communique number two, I stated that Russia was upset due to the fact that they were not informed of the attacks. However, they were aware of the attacks as soon as they started to happen because of satellite imagery. The release that they gave was that the first they heard about it was when the cruise missiles were actually hitting the target was wrong. But they have every reason to be upset due to the closeness of the attacks to their borders. And it is worrying for the Russians due to the fact of these attacks being close to their border threatens their sovereignty. So it was a very dangerous move. The more vocal opponents are just vocal opponents in Russia. They are certainly upset with the fact that the attacks were launched and the closeness to their borders. Pakistan is also upset, because the majority of the missiles went through their sovereign space and they were not informed of the attacks. Calculations were that the Soviet Union would inform them, Russia would inform them of these attacks and give them advance warning, which they did not, because the communication between the two countries is spotty at best, and also the fact of the time of night that this was occurring. Unfortunately, some of the cruise missiles did not do their job. In fact, one had a malfunction on board, and because of the safety mechanisms, landed and is now in the hands of the Pakistani armed forces. This is a situation that bears looking at, because they now have a piece of hardware which they can copy. And much as reverse engineering is a topic that has been discussed in the past, the Pakistani military has now been given the opportunity to do reverse engineering. There was some damage done to the missile when it landed, but it was not self-destructed as it should have been, which means that they have an intact missile that has minor damage to the casing and some of the computer hardware, which can be easily repaired, analysed and replicated. As in any such attack, as the attack in Afghanistan, there is a certain amount of error that occurs. You cannot have pinpoint accuracy over such great distance, pinpoint being within millimetres. Pinpoint accuracy for these kind of attacks is within a few hundred feet, hence the reason for sending so many missiles. Now, moving further down the coast, down to the Sudan. This attack on a supposed, quote, factory for making certain precursors for ZX nerve gas is an error, a big mistake. Certainly, Osama bin Laden was involved with it. Certainly, he was a contributor financially. For him, it was an investment, which if the United States had stuck to its original story of saying that they wanted to hurt him financially, would have worked. However, the fact is that, yes, it did make the precursor chemicals for ZX nerve gas, or VX nerve gas. However, one of the precursor chemicals for VX nerve gas is also used in making medication to fight malaria. In Sudan, malaria is more prevalent than AIDS. So this drug to fight malaria that was being produced at this factory has been taken away from that area. The fact that there are trace chemicals of nerve gas precursor agents is expected because the chemicals that are used to make this drug to fight malaria are a precursor chemical. Now, statements by the Defense Department over the last 36 hours saying that they have found links to Iraq through this chemical manufacturing plant is expected because they also have a problem with malaria. So not only has the attacks been on another sovereign nation and that through somebody else's airspace, but they have taken away a medical facility. Certainly the chemicals produced could be used to make nerve gas, but they're also just as equally used to make medical supplies to fight malaria. This attack was a mistake. It was designed to strike a facility that was believed to be making weapons of mass destruction. The research was not done, and the attack was carried out and was effective in destroying a medical supply facility that was to help people. Now, getting back to Osama bin Laden, in 1996, he was indicted by the United States government secretly for terrorist actions. In 1995, Osama bin Laden was a guest at the Hyatt Regency in New York. In 1994, he spent 3 months at the Hyatt in New York. If he had been such a threat, why was he not arrested at the time when he was in the country? Mainly because the history of Osama bin Laden has been back of an ally until he launched these attacks. If the government of your country had done more research when he was first contacted the governmental agencies, and was supplied with the technology and weaponry to be able to fight the then former Soviet Union in Afghanistan, which is the reason why he is an honored guest there, they would have found out that he is, in actual fact, a very dangerous individual that can switch sides at a moment's notice. He is in the business of not mass destruction, not destruction of the United States, but in the business of making money through whatever means he can. And in doing so, with his mental mindset, he sees that whatever means necessary is by causing destruction of the United States. The reason being, or his logic, is that by attacking a country that is a superpower and creating such a ruckus, that in actual fact can benefit his finances because of the destruction created by attacks and by the use of weapons. He has also invested in weaponry. Research has discovered that he has invested in certain military contractors. I cannot say where, but I will let you guess. Okay, now moving on to the stock market and the crisis in the Middle East, the Far East. The stock market in Hong Kong, Jakarta, and Tokyo at the moment are fluctuating rapidly. We are having large jumps of up to 299 points plus in Japan, 300 plus in Hong Kong, 200 plus in Jakarta. These fluctuations give more cause for warning than the attacks on Afghanistan and the Sudan. This is because of the volatility. These oscillations are getting bigger and bigger. They will reach a point where they are so large that a recovery will be difficult from a negative deficit. Now, moving along, following the economic path, the Russian Moscow market is also fluctuating, not as dramatically, but the fluctuations are there. It is not a steady climb or decrease, although the decrease was almost catastrophic a few weeks ago. With the devaluation of the ruble, it is only a temporary remedy which may, at most, last 3 months. I would personally say maybe a month and a half to 2 months. Once the currencies have settled, then the old pattern will be re-established and the situation will become grim. Because of the devaluation of the ruble, the finances of the Soviet Union, Russia, are in somewhat of a disarray. With the ruble being worth less to the dollar, means that the prices of imports have increased dramatically. And these imports are not luxury items such as computers, automobiles, and digital watches. They are necessities, grain, food supplies, medical supplies. So, if the Soviet Union, Russia, and I do apologize for keep on calling it the Soviet Union, I've been doing some research, continues, then they are in for some pretty tough times. The symptoms of the Soviet Union are a model to watch. Okay, I have finished on my dissertation. Let's answer questions.
Okay, first off, how is it that Osama bin Laden is actually making money from doing the from doing terrorism? He might be invested in weapons, but blowing things up is not a money making proposition.
No, it's actually not. But reconstruction, which is where he got his fortune in building, is.
He's a contractor of a large scale, I think.
Very large scale.
Why would anybody hire him to rebuild buildings he blew up?
It's
seems like that'd be rather redundant exercise in futility.
He didn't blow the buildings up.
Ah, but he financed, funded, or backed people who did?
Indirectly, yes.
And everybody knows this?
Not the way that you think. You're thinking that he financed the buildings of the compounds of the U.S. embassies.
Or the bombings.
Now, he financed the bombings, correct.
Right.
He did not finance the buildings.
Right.
He financed the buildings that were destroyed by the cruise missile attacks. He is in a win-win situation there.
I don't get it. You build a building, it gets blown up, where do you make your money? You don't get to rebuild it.
Yes, you do.
Why? It seems like, you know, so everybody seems to say, well, he was involved in some way. If we build it, they'll just blow it up again.
Mm-hmm. But they've got to rebuild. And there is nothing more powerful on your planet than a belief in a religion. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people went to their death in the Crusades, believing that they went straight to heaven because they faced the infidel.
Well, what do you think, Doctor?
I'm of a totally different religion. On my home planet, we have a matriarchal society.
So it's a very warm, welcoming type place to live.
Yeah, quite. In a way.
Somewhat. We have a patriarchal society in the United States.
Is the land very welcoming, like a mother's arms
often? We fix the problems that we created. My species, we can be incredibly aggressive. We can make your race look like a bunch of wimps. Being a matriarchal society, we have a history similar to yours, in the fact that we had an industrial age. We almost destroyed our planet, but we learned that by taking care of the planet in an appropriate way, not just going ahead and saying, okay, no more burning forests, no more industrial capability. We learned how to control our industrial capability, and we learned how to use those gases as a benefit instead of just discharging them into the air.
Uh-huh.
And in turn, it made it much more economical and much more profitable. We learned how to control the growth of the planet. We learned how to control the land. We learned how to control the seas. We learned how to control chemicals. We learned all sorts of things. We found that there is a space in between high industrial capability, which pollutes the atmosphere, and living in harmony with the land. There is a middle ground. You cannot say no more forest fires, because forest fires are part of nature's cycle. You cannot say no more building of dams, because dams are part of nature's cycle. After all, on your planet, you have beavers. Do not beavers build dams for beaver purposes, the same as humans build dams for human purposes? So it's finding that balance. And we found that balance. It's not that difficult. But you can't say, okay, no more industrialization, no more computers, no more CO2, no more ozone being produced, no more ozone damaging chemicals being produced. You have to find that balance. And in doing so, you find that there is a way of controlling and using and harmonizing with those chemicals. So that there is a neutral ground.
It sounds like a well-prepared meal.
Mm-hmm. It's well thought out.
And you believe in running the land from your children of the future.
No, right? We run it because it's aesthetically pleasing to us now.
Yeah.
The fact that it benefits the children in the future is an added bonus.
Uh-huh. Do you have famine and worry about drugs like you do here?
Yeah, we have our social problems. We have famines, but we don't interfere. It's a natural part of the cycle. A few hundred years ago, we almost eradicated our race because of our tribalistic nature. At the time, it was approximately 50-50 male to female. And in the fighting that happened, the males were almost wiped out. It went from 50-50 to about 33, or actually 25, 75. So it was a ratio of about 4 to 1. And yeah, that did not, that was dangerous. So the women took control. We finished up the wards. We had our own wards, which were even more barbaric than the men had. And we decided to work together. We still feel the effects of those wards. The ratio at the moment is about 3 to 1.
So did women have 2 husbands?
No, it's actually the opposite way around.
Oh, really?
The fact that it wasn't the women that suffered so badly, it was the men. There are less men on our planet, and by some quirk of nature, we have girl childs more often than we have male childs. Mm. And male childs are very placid nowadays. Very, very placid.
Very important.
The placidity is kind of looked upon as undesirable sometimes.
Why?
Because of the way that we are. We're very competitive in nature. We can be very aggressive. And being placid means that you get walked upon. And try to make them tough. I have 3 brothers on my home planet, and now, unfortunately, 4 sisters. That's also another problem that we suffer from, is that sometimes ailments, simple ailments, at wrong times, will kill us off.
Ailments as in sickness?
Yeah.
Like a common cold?
Mm-hmm. It's only the young that have that.
Are you immune to antibiotics?
My immune system is different from yours. Oh. I heal much, much, much more rapidly. However, if I get a cold, I'm much, much sicker.
Antibiotics, they do work, though.
Oh, they work, but if you overprescribe them, things become immune to it.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's not, it's viruses that they're designed to attack. It's, I forget what it is, but things that aren't viruses, they're prescribed for as well. And it just doesn't work. And that's part of the problem. And the other part of the problem is that people on your planet start to feel better, so they stop taking the medication. And of course, they're not that better.
And then the
it comes immunity. Back. The virus comes back and they start taking the tablets again, and it's too late because the virus
is already conquered.
Well, they've mutated. Okay, next question.
Mm-hmm.
Skip.
No. I'm listening to Mac.
Okay.
All right. There was an email sent to me on translation period and dimensional shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd go into some of this with you and Amol and Kiri. Because a lot of it deals with the future. It's another one of those fourth dimensional chip change things.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know. So, apparently, according to it, and if you actually put this to 6 dimensions, it makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But they would say that prior to the poles of the Earth moving to new locations,
mm-hmm.
which is where the human consciousness moves into the fourth dimension, there are a period of time where there'd be worldwide chaos. Mm-hmm. A period where most people go insane, all social systems, financial systems, political systems, etc., collapse, and the planet is plunged into total chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's sort of similar to what we're already working with in the meantime.
But not that drastic.
Correct.
Most, from what I've researched, most of these dimensional shift people talk about a time of mass destruction, total chaos, great harm, major disasters, etc., etc., etc. They paint a picture of doom and gloom. They say everything is going to be bad until the change. I find this hard to understand because they're not achieving anything. They're adding to the problem. Anyway, continue.
Well, we've talked about this before, but just so I can put it on tape, you know, when I put this out, the odds of the pole shifting from where they're at now to complete reverse.
Oh, it does happen. It does happen.
But actually, this says here it does happen. just happened recently.
What do they define as recently?
Let's see. They say that basically the geomagnetic field is undergoing huge changes, and that it's growing weaker. 2,000 years ago, the field measured 4 Gauss. About 500 years ago, now it's at 0.04 Gauss.
When did they come up with these figures? 2,000 years ago?
I don't know how they figured out it was that much 2,000 years ago. But they say that the field is changing. And now they're saying that in June, July, August, September, October, and part of November of 1996, there was a bigger and longer anomaly. During that time, the South Pole actually moved around. And if you had a compass, you could see it moving on a daily basis, near from 2.5 degrees to as much as 17 degrees in a single day.
Do you know what would happen if there was that kind of degree shift?
Mm-mm.
You're talking about earthquakes that are on the 9-plus scale.
Oh, that's 17 degrees in a single day.
Mm-hmm. Major earthquakes. And I mean major.
No, wouldn't that increase the wobble?
Correct. You see, the problem with your popular modern science is that they don't have the records. They don't have the records. You're going to hate me. Al Gore. This July was the hottest July on records in the United States. Records only go back 150 years. However, what they're comparing to is the coldest century, the 1800s, to the turn of the century, was the coldest winter on Chinese records that go back 600 years. And our records, it was the 1800s to 1900, was the coldest 100 years in close to 1,000 years. Thank you. The 1200s was warmer by 3 degrees on average than the current 100 years at the moment, from 1898 to 1998, by 3 degrees. The 700 years before that was warmer on average by 2 degrees. So it's no big deal. Al Gore is going around sounding alarms about something that is wrong. They do not have the records. And where the records are on your planet are in ice cores. And if they did ice samples in glaciers and on the South Pole, they would find that this century is a normal century. If they did the research and looked around in places that records that go back over 1,000 years, China, Japan, India, Europe, Rome, Greece, Great Britain. Okay, let me read something that I have prepared, because I was expecting you to ask this question. In 1122, in the year of our Lord, the wine produced was of, and I'm, instead of going thee and thou and thus and so on, I'm skipping over it, produced a bountiful harvest. Guess where the record comes from?
Italy?
No. A little monastery just outside the town in Great Britain of York. They have not been able to produce wine there in 500 years. They've just started to grow vines and produce wine there again.
It wasn't a moneymaker for them?
They couldn't grow it. It was too wet, too damp, and too cold. So what does that tell you?
Warm summers.
Mm-hmm. Which means that the warm summers were the norm. There are pictures that go back to the 1300s and 1200s that are looked upon as, oh, nice little winter scenes. Do you know why the artist painted those pictures? Because it was new. That's the only reason artists paint things in nature is because it's new. Something that is unheard of. In about 1200 to 1600, they had a mini ice age. That's not all that long ago.
Wasn't the major ice age up until throughout the period just before Atlantic went down? And that those places that are fairly habitable now back then weren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's all part of a natural cycle. I hate to go on my tirades about, and I get more and more informed as I have a tirade because I go off and research and I've come up with answers to my questions. Remember my last tirade was about global warming? Well, I went off and researched and I'm looking at all these records and stuff that we have and going, wait a second. However, it is unmistakable that the human species is having an effect. And a negative effect. But it's not irreversible as politicians are claiming.
Good. And a couple more for you then.
Okay.
That's when you're going to love a lot. That at one point, according to a guy named Greg Brady, this is just June of 96, the South Pole of the planet actually moved off the coast of California for a few hours.
What? Run, can you read that again?
It says, at one point, according to Greg Brady, the South Pole of the planet actually moved off the coast of California for a few hours. This info can be easily checked. Just look at any aeronautical map of the world for any major airport prior to June 1986 and then get a new one. They had to make new maps in order to land their planes and compare them. You'll see that the error correction from that North Pole has changed, which means the South Pole has moved. Chicago O'Hare International changed by 2 and 1/2.
Go back. Did you say magnetic?
Yeah.
That's normal.
Magnetic North Pole.
The magnetic North Pole.
Yeah, that does
change it.
But this is the South Pole, where it moved up the coast of California. We should put the North Pole somewhere in the Russia, wouldn't it?
Thereabouts.
Yeah. Right by Siberia, if I'm not mistaken.
No, China. Well, Mongolia. No, that, again, that kind of shift would, you would have massive earthquakes of approximately, it would rip your planet to pieces.
Seems like it would be, even for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
Wake people up in the morning.
No, it wouldn't wake up people up in the morning.
Isn't that dark?
Oh, yes. And then some. And then some. As I said, it would rip your planet to pieces.
Oh, yeah. Okay, one other one?
Yeah, I'm in for good laughs.
Alright. Yeah, I love them too. This one's about Mexico and the fires down in Mexico.
Oh, let me guess. They were generated by the Chupacabra.
No.
Oh, nice party pooper.
No, this is all about the...
Let me guess. It's all about the Aztec warriors coming out of the forest and being totally confused.
No, sorry. I don't
know. Toltecs?
No.
Anasazis?
No, we're told that the states of fire are being caused by farmers burning their crops to make more crops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, actual eyewitnesses in Mexico that I have talked with have a different story. They say Mount Popocatépetl, about 40 miles southeast of Mexico City, has been erupting for over a year now, and the ground in the surrounding areas. Eyewitnesses say the trees are spontaneously breaking the flames, which should mean that the ground would have to be over 459 degrees Fahrenheit. One report said they even saw animals spontaneously burst into flames. One eyewitness I spoke with said that within long ways, that even a long ways, the ground is so hot from the that rubber soles of shoes will melt while walking in the forest.
And these people walking in the forest are not spontaneously combusting?
Apparently they're wearing rubber shoes.
So which is protecting them, huh? Okay. Now, it is true that that mountain is erupting. And it is true that it is a volcano. And it is true that the ground in that area is warmer. But 400 degrees?
I just read another game.
That is
exaggerated. 400 degrees, everything can catch on fire.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the people are spreading sort of like
here
all
over. Yeah.
Because at 400 degrees, even your grass will burn, your trees, your bushes.
Instead of spontaneously combusting, the whole area would be aflame.
That's right.
For example, who's got a lighter?
I do.
Okay. Hold a piece of paper that far above it and then light it. But don't even bother because we know what's going to happen.
It's going to turn brown and then
it will catch fire.
It'll catch fire.
And that is exactly what would happen in the jungles.
Well, that's where the same way all the fire's going breaking up.
I'm sorry, I find that very hard to believe.
Well, they're contradicting themselves there, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the ground's 400 and some degrees, you'd have a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can you walk on ground that hot if it's burning?
Mm-hmm. Rubber soles would melt, and so would the feet within it, and so would the people within it, and so would the eyewitnesses. They would go up like a torch.
Okay. Now, in a related news, it says in June of 98, another huge volcano, Pacaya, erupted near Guadalajara City.
Mm-hmm.
In California, the Mammoth Lake area appears to be potentially ready for a possible eruption.
Mm-hmm.
Mount St. Helens is receiving about 100 earthquakes a day. Mount Rainier also seems to be dangerously close to a possible eruption.
Mm-hmm.
Underwater volcanoes forming off the coast of California.
Mm-hmm.
What is being said, the entire coastline from Guatemala to Washington State is becoming dangerously close to some kind of major reaction. Exactly what? No one knows.
Okay. Let's look at Mammoth Mountain. Mammoth Mountain is a batholith within a caldera. A caldera is a volcano that went kablooey. My estimate on your planet is about 7,000 years ago. It is still a hot spot. And what is happening is that magma is coming up to the surface, creating earthquakes. And yes, for Mammoth Mountain, there is actually that possibility. If it erupts, it's going to be not a major eruption, but it's going to be on the size of Mount St. Helens, which was a small eruption. The volcanoes off the coast of California. Yep, they are there. They're off the coast of California. Depends how far off the coast of California you're talking about.
You mean Hawaii?
Mm-hmm. In another 50,000 years, there's going to be a new island. Mount Rainier. Yep, it's a sleeping volcano. The earthquakes and everything are natural and useful. Because the magma is coming to the surface and meeting colder rock, it cools and the mountain expands. And as it cools, it contracts and returns back to its normal size, creating earthquakes. There is a possibility that there will be a build-up of magma. The magma will break to the surface and there will be a major eruption. Mount Hood. I'm surprised they didn't mention Mount Hood. Yep, that's doing it too. I'm surprised they didn't mention Mount Shasta.
That's what I was wondering.
Yep, that's doing it too. You want to know why they're doing it? Same reason. It's natural. As the plates subduct under each other, the magma is heated up and comes to the surface. It's all a natural cycle. If they explode, yep, there's going to be great loss of life. Yep, there's going to be great harm. It's going to be pretty grim and sad. However, volcanic activities are very useful. What benefits, what is the single biggest benefit of volcanic activity?
Land.
Mm-hmm.
Precious metal.
Mm-hmm. It's also very, very rich.